Time to take a look at those aches and pains and sprains and strains that you might have with our two guests today. Larry Mueller here, but my guests are Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, who is a physical therapist in the UW-Madison's Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation in the Medical Science Center. And, you know, Jill comes with us, comes by every so often. It's nice to have you back.
It's great to be here.
And it's good to have her here. We can get caught up on our family issues and stuff during
sisters,
breaks,
you know,
and everything. So if you hear any bickering in the background, it's just normal familial stuff.
Right. Who's hosting Thanksgiving?
Yeah, exactly. You are making a turkey, aren't you?
Right, exactly.
Well, I tell you what, you two are in a business that will never... you'll never run out of work, will you?
Oh, no, no. You know, in fact, my husband said to me last night, this is very funny, he's got a hernia, and he was out doing a bunch of work yesterday, moving wood and stuff for our wood stove and so on. And he said, I did really well until I had to hold this out. He said, now I really hurt. And I said, see, it's people like you that keep me in business.
Exactly.
So there will always be business for us.
I think so, especially with the aging baby boomers who who know to be healthy, who want to stay healthy, and have good access to healthcare. They're very much, as I refer, the subpopulation of what I call geriatric sports medicine is really growing, because those seniors are, you know, very, very healthy and want to resume a healthy and maintain a healthy lifestyle. So we're always busy.
But as we get older, that group is going to start coming and probably already has joint problems, be my guess.
Yep. You know, the aging process starts a lot younger than people think. You know, and whenever I talk to people about this, they say, oh, you know, I'm only 40 or I'm only 50. But people think, you know, you hit a certain age, and I'm not sure what it is, but I know as I get older, it gets pushed back farther and farther. But you hit a certain age where you think, okay, now that's old, and now your joint should hurt. But really, your joints start to break down long before then. And knee osteoarthritis is the number one cause of disability in the elderly. It's not heart disease or anything else. It's knee arthritis. So, you know, if your knees are aching, well, you're not alone. But there are things that can be done. Physical therapy can help keep you healthy, can help keep your joints strong. Sure, it's not going to slow the aging process, but what we do is we optimize all the other systems that we can. We help you, teach you how to keep your body weight down, how to keep your muscles strong, what kind of shoe wear to use, what kind of activity program is appropriate given your strength, your body size, the status of your joints, and so on. So we can help keep you healthy and keep you active, and that's going to be the best thing for your joints.
Well, Mike in Genesee has a question for you, so let's go right to Mike. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I was calling because I'm 47, and I play basketball two or three times a week and do some light weights on the off days usually. But I'm getting like a tendon, what I think might be a tendonitis in my elbows. And I'm wondering if there's anything that I can do to help that therapy-wise, or if that's something that just, you know, rest or ice or that sort of thing would help.
Sure. Is the point, where exactly on your elbow are you sore, Mike?
It's kind of in the softest tissue part of the point. If you can find, you know, the point of your elbow and then slide a little bit towards your upper arm.
Absolutely.
There's that little gap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I've got the pain. And if I push on it just with my finger, it's tender a little bit, too.
Okay. Does it hurt if you grip something or try and...
Gripping doesn't bother it. Lifting or pulling like a curling motion, that tends to give it some pain. And I don't do heavy weights at all, but I do play basketball, like I said, fairly regularly.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds to me like you probably have a little bit of what we'd call lateral epicondylitis, or otherwise known as tennis elbow, even though you don't play tennis.
Okay.
You can get it from if you have to do a tight gripping motion and then that curling type motion. So gripping the weight bar and doing some curling motion may have aggravated it. If you did a lot of raking lately,
I haven't, but, you know, as strange as it seems like every year I have a new way of freeing myself sleeping. And I was wondering if possibly, you know, having it tucked under my pillow when I'm sleeping on my side could be aggravating it, because I do sleep like that.
That could be a factor, especially if your wrists are curled with it, because the muscles that we're talking about actually go down and cross all the way past your wrist and into your fingers. Mm-hmm. So positioning of your wrist and hand is also can also be a factor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but should you modify your program or should you just rest it? What we try to do is talk about controlled activity, and that is finding the things that aggravate it and starting a progressive program of essentially increasing that tissue's tolerance to that. So if you know, certain activities such as a curl aggravate it, what you should do is back down on the weight until and perform those activities until you feel sort of a burning sensation, like the muscles getting worked, and then stop. Should be anywhere between probably 15 to 20 repetitions.
Okay.
If it's sore before then, you have too much weight. You need to back down. And, you know, I'd do that every day if I could, coupled with some stretching.
Okay.
And see if you can't beat it back. If you're having trouble and tendonitis is, and actually the new term is probably tendinosis, which is a degenerative condition of your tendons, actually. It sort of parallels degeneration of your joints. See a physical therapist, because oftentimes dosing exercise in the presence of an injury is really difficult, especially when it's in your upper body for something that you use all the time.
Okay.
So if you're, you know, using your arms actively, it gets really hard to get the exercise dosage right.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. And Jean in Eau Claire is up next. Hi, Jean. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have, about 6 years ago, I actually did something kind of dumb and ended up ultimately injuring my knee. Several years later, I still had problems with it. I can't explain it except that it almost feels like there are times when I will like step and pivot in that kind of a motion, and all of a sudden, it'll almost feel like it dislocates. And it's so bad, it hurts so much that I can't put any weight on it. The only way to get it back in place is to let it basically dangle and to hit it a few times to get it to pop back into place.
Wow.
And I went to a doctor and they actually did an MRI and told me there was nothing wrong.
Huh.
Now,
really?
It's on the inside of the knee, a little below the kneecap on the inside part. I know I can tell exactly. And a couple days later, it'll be swollen for a couple of days. I'll ice it. But it's just gotten so bad that I'm afraid to go out dancing or you know, I can't do any physical activities that I used to do. I mean, you know, skiing's out of the question, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm. How long ago?
I don't know what that might be.
How long ago did you have the MRI or have your knee examined?
Probably about 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, it's time to have another examination, because that's not right. It's not. Things like that don't happen to a normal knee. And what's wrong with your knee? I mean, there are three things that come to mind. The first is probably a torn anterior cruciate ligament. Second would be a meniscus tear where it may bucket in and out of your knee. It could be a patellar dislocation. It could be your kneecap also, which should easily be missed on an MRI. The other things could be missed on an MRI depending upon the quality of the MRI. So I would seek another opinion. And in the meantime, if you have a primary care physician who could refer you to physical therapy, or you can go see a physical therapist directly depending upon your insurance plan, they can get you started on some exercises to help stabilize your knee. They can also do an examination of your knee and probably come pretty close to a good diagnosis in the absence of the MRI as well, at least a functional diagnosis.
Yeah.
Exactly. Can I ask what the stupid thing was you were doing 6 years ago?
Well, I'm 39, and basically I was outside in my front yard picking up some of my kids' things, and they were teenagers at the time, and came across my son's skateboard. thought I was younger than I was.
Great, great.
So you definitely have a mechanism of injury that could cause significant damage to your knee, as Lori said. So I definitely agree with Lori. You need to get this checked out again because you're young and that is not normal for your knee to react that way.
Yeah, and every time you re-injure your knee and it swells up like that, you're creating more pathology in your knee.
Yeah, so sooner rather than later.
Yep, get another opinion.
Yeah, thanks, Jean, for calling. Good luck. Brian in Arcadia, we turn to you. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I've got some growth in the old big toe.
Uh-oh.
Some gout?
Yeah.
Ah.
What can I got to do about that?
Well, have you seen your physician about it?
Yeah, I hobbled around for a week, and then I decided I'd go in and see what he had to say.
Okay.
I didn't really say too much.
Okay. Have you, so they didn't give you medication or talk about any diet or lifestyle changes associated with that?
He just gave me the green pill.
The green pill, okay. And are you taking it?
Yes.
Okay, is it getting better?
It is helping, but yeah, I was kind of wondering what a guy should do to avoid it.
Okay, well that's, again, a lot of that comes from lifestyle and diet changes. So, you know, having a discussion with your primary care physician about that to help prevent that is key. So it seems to me that a lot of that is diet related and lifestyle related. In terms of physical activity, I don't know of any particular physical activity that prevents gout, but certainly treating the symptoms, using cold in the area to help relieve pain, modifying your shoe wear so that you don't walk with a abnormal gait while you're going through an active bout with your gout will help decrease the strain on your other joints.
Yeah, it's always, isn't it, rich foods and sometimes alcohol?
Yes. Right. Red meats, I think.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I think it has to do with some of the fatty acid.
And protein.
Yeah. So usually in terms of prevention, the focus is on diet and lifestyle.
Yeah.
And less on physical activity.
Right. Yep. And it is a form of arthritis, which a lot of people don't understand, but it is a form of inflammatory arthritis.
Mm-hmm. Yep, inflammation of a joint. Mm-hmm. Yep. It has a different cause than the typical wear and tear that you think of with osteoarthritis.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks, Brian, for calling. Dave in Madison, on to you. Hi, Dave.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I heard you were talking about joint issues, and I have one myself that I can get to. I've had left hip pain for, boy, a number of years now. And when it really bothers me, I'm a landscaper, as it goes, just for informational purposes. Mm-hmm. So I put a lot of stress on it. But it's not when I work it that it really injures or hurts me. What really bothers me is when I leave it at rest. And the main time it happens is when I'm driving for any amount of period of time, and I'll stop the car and open the door and go to get out and put the weight on my left leg, and there will just be an intense pain in my hip, and I can't even put any weight on my leg, and I'll just crash to the ground. So it's been something that's been bothering me for, 4 or 5 years now, and I've had a x-ray taken on it, but very little was told, and just wondering if there was any other ways of handling it.
Was there any injury? Do you have any injury at all?
No, it's been kind of a progressive thing. There wasn't any real moment that I injured it or anything. It's just been progressively getting worse as the years go by.
And the radiographs were pretty clean? No arthritis that they could see?
No, not at all. And this was maybe about a year and a half ago or so that I had it looked at.
Okay. And does it hurt deep in your joint or more on the outside of your hip?
It's very, very deep, and it feels like it's like on right on the ball joint.
Okay. Okay. A couple things. There could be, first of all, you have to stop and think that you're doing things on both legs. So why is one hip bothering you so tremendously and the other one isn't? A couple things about the car ride that are significant. One is the vibration of a car. If you have a problem with a joint, that is not the muscles around it or something like that, the vibration is really bothersome. And there's also something about the position that you're in, where typically you don't move a lot when you're in a car. When you're driving, you may shift your weight a little bit, but for the most part, you're relatively stationary. And joints don't like to be relatively stationary. They don't like to be vibrated. So it suggests to me that there's something wrong with the joint. Now, the plain radiograph showed that there was no arthritis, but there are other structures in your joint, one of which is the labrum, which is kind of the tissue that cups your joint. And some of the newer studies and newer surgeries are being done on that structure in your hip. So it may be time for a reevaluation to see if there's a labral injury. It would also be time for physical therapy. If you hadn't had any physical therapy, for a physical therapist to take a look at your hip, your leg. Why is one leg bothering you? Do you have a leg length difference? Do you have a pelvic asymmetry mm-hmm. that's creating problems in one side that can be addressed through physical therapy treatments? Mm-hmm. So that's where I'd start right now.
I definitely agree. The prolonged sitting and then the pain when you get up almost kind of leads us to think that you have some sort of inflammation going on in your joint. You get oftentimes what's called post-rest gel, where after you do activity and you sit, you become very stiff because of inflammation. So I kind of think labrum, as Lori talked about too, and I do think it's time to get some secondary imaging where soft tissue does appear, such as an MRI. You don't carry your wallet in your back pocket, do you?
I do, but on the opposite side.
But on the opposite side, okay. Because those are the kind of things we think about with positioning as well in your car. And whoever invented bucket seats certainly keeps physical therapy in business, because it just does not put our low back and hips in a good position. So seat positions many times in cars are difficult, not only the vibration, as Lori talked about, but that position in a bucket seat, it can be tricky.
Mm. And, you know, with when you're in a – I'm thinking about this. Usually it's your right leg that you're using most of the time, because you're using the gas and the brake even. I brake with my right foot, too. Mm-hmm. So you're
– the left leg is pretty stationary.
It just sits there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Joints don't like to be stationary.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
Good luck.
There you have it, Dave. Thank you very much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today as we talk aches and pains and sprains and strains here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches and pains today with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Larry Mueller here. Jim Packard, the friendly guy who answers your calls when you call in at 800-642-1234. By the way, you could also email us at talk@wpr.org with your question. Carol in Hazelhurst is up next, so let's go there. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. I am wondering how declining estrogen levels for us girls in our 40s and 50s affects our joints. I'm 53 years old, and I have been an avid trail runner for a number of years, and it seems this past year I've had something aching all the time and have not been able to run like I used to. I've had x-rays of my knees, my lower back, and arthritis isn't showing up, and I'm just wondering if estrogen has something to do with it.
You know, estrogen has something to do with just about everything, near as I can tell. Well, as you know, it's really important for the maintenance of your bone health, right? That's something that people are pretty familiar with, that decreasing estrogen levels results in osteopenia, osteoporosis, that's significant after menopause, because that's the most dramatic drop in estrogen. But, you know, like all things, it's probably declining prior to that time. Well, bone is a connective tissue. It's made up of the same kinds of cells and ground substance and other connective tissue matrix that your joints are and your muscles are and your tendons are and your fascia is. So you have to think that it makes sense that estrogen declines plays a role in all of your connective tissue. So, yes, it does play a role. I think it's probably more significant in women, which is why we see this increase in connective tissue disorders in women, more so than men as we age. And it's especially prominent around menopause. So that's what we see epidemiologically. So, yes, you're experiencing that.
Right. And we know there are estrogen receptors on ligaments. So, you know, it certainly can affect the joint in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So you need to do the same kind of things to protect your muscles and joints as you do your bones. And that is, you know, regular exercise that's dosed appropriately for what your tissues can handle.
Okay.
Right. So it may be that you can't run every day, but you need to alternate days of running with some non-impact activities such as biking or swimming.
Okay. Sounds good.
And I just want to give a little plug here for the whole estrogen, calcium, et cetera. I know that most of the time the osteopenia and osteoporosis and our bone mineral density, that starts appearing postmenopausal. But the time in your life when you actually fill your bone bank is when you're an adolescent and up to the age of 25. After age 25, we start making withdrawals from our bone bank. And so this is a plug for all those moms out there of adolescent girls to really encourage good calcium intake through milk and dairy, et cetera, because it's really important that girls get their calcium at that age.
Do you have then a recommendation for vitamin D? Because that's a very big thing right now as far as amounts recommended amounts have been increased lately.
Yes, they have.
For the calcium absorption.
They have. Vitamin D plays a key role in calcium absorption, and I don't know exactly what the changes have been.
I hear variability. I would suggest you speak with your doctor. I can tell you what my doctor, and I'm around your age, would say. Stop looking over my shoulder, sister. He told me 1,000 milligrams a day mm-hmm. in the summer and 2,000 in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So okay. I would suggest you speak with your physician about that.
All righty. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, boy, lots of callers here. Let's go to Scott in Superior next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Larry and guests. Wanted to offer to your gentleman with gout the fact that gout is caused by the crystallization of uric acid crystals in the joints, which is an irritant. And if anyone's ever had gout, they'll know how much of an irritant it is.
Mm-hmm.
Your uric acid level can be checked. Your blood serum uric acid level can be checked. And if it's high, it can be treated. And it should be, if anyone's ever had gout, they should have a uric acid level drawn.
Wonderful. We were just talking about that during the break, about the uric acid levels and so on. How frequently would you suggest that those be checked?
I don't think it needs to be done as a screening test.
Okay.
It certainly could be and can be. I don't think it's terribly expensive, but for somebody that has had any episodes of gout, they should have a uric acid level drawn.
Yep.
Okay. That's great advice.
Thank you
Wonderful.
Very much.
Wonderful. Thank you so You're much back. For calling in with that.
Appreciate it. And there you have it. Mike in Cambridge, we'll go to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hello there. About 3 weeks ago, I was working with drain tile, and I had to put a sock over a 100-foot piece of drain tile, and I held it between my knees, and it took me about 2 hours to do.
Oh.
And then the next day, I got down on my hands and knees in the morning to do my stretching that I normally do, and I felt like a numbness on my shin. And it feels like there's no pain in the knee or anything, but it feels like a numbness on the shin, kind of a dullness, and maybe a little fluid in there. I was wondering what might have caused that.
Can I ask how old you are, Mike?
I just turned 50.
Okay. And so were you hunched over and flexed in your spine as you held this between your legs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you, and this is just on one side?
Just on one side, yep,
okay.
On the right side.
Okay, and it's just in your shin? Is it down in your foot or toes?
No, it hasn't gone down into the foot. It's just on the shin from about the ankle on up to the knee.
Okay. Well, there are two possibilities. One is, as Jill suggested, from that hunched over position, you put traction on one of the nerves coming from your low back, and
okay.
That's created a localized area of numbness. Have you had any history of back problems at all?
No, none.
Okay. All right. The other possibility is that you put pressure on a nerve locally around your knee. If you were holding that, pressed up against that drain tile or sock, if you were sort of squeezing it with pressure on
yep.
the inside of your knee for a long period of time, you could have put pressure on a local nerve,
okay.
which would be the preferred option if I was given
right.
a choice of those two
right.
things. And it should recover from that.
Right.
Okay.
Is there a position, Mike, that you get in that makes that shin pain worse or better? Like,
well, there's no pain in it at all. It's just kind of a dullness feeling. And when I get down on my hands and knees in the morning to do my stretches that I do, I can feel that it's like a little bit of a swollenness. You can
mm-hmm.
you feel it where you didn't feel it before, you know, pressing
mm-hmm.
on the floor.
Okay.
But there's not a tremendous amount of swelling, but it's kind of hard to explain. It's
yeah.
just like a dullness.
Sure. Well,
yeah.
then, it, as Jill suggested, if it doesn't change with the position of your body or your back, then it's more likely coming locally from wherever you were pressing against the drain tile. It'd certainly be reasonable to have your physician take a look at that and rule out anything else. But something like that should recover slowly over time. I'd put ice on that local area where you were pressing on the drain tile if there's a local inflammation where you feel that swelling. And that sensation should start to come back.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
You bet.
Appreciate the call. Jane in Green Bay, we are on to you. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I am a person who sits at a computer a lot, and I'm I related to the woman who talked before about menopause. I'm about 53 and have recently been weaning myself off of Premarin, and I've noticed my tendons and joints are talking to me a little more now. And as I sit at the computer, I now have odd sensations traveling down to my right foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to manage it myself by doing pelvic tilts and strengthening exercises and mm-hmm. stretches, hamstring mm-hmm. stretches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those who doesn't have good health insurance, so I'm hoping to find a way to address it without a lot of cost if I can.
Is this a pain that's going down your leg, or is it you?
Yeah, it's a weird sensation. It is like it can be a cold sensation that travels to my toes. It feels like it's something related to nerves. I can't call it pain, although mm. there will be pain then in like my sacrum mm. as I'm sitting.
Mm. And does the pain come on? Do you have to be sitting there a while, Jane, before your symptoms come on?
Yes.
And how long do you have to be sitting there?
An hour
okay.
or two.
And then if you get up from your computer, do those symptoms go away if you get up and walk around?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's very good.
Yeah, you've just described perfectly how arthritic joints work. And earlier there was a call about the car, and I made the comment that joints don't like to be stationary, and that's what happens when you're sitting at a computer. The good news is you can still, at this point in time, sit there for an hour before your symptoms come on. Joints don't like to be stationary. They like to move. So what I would suggest is not waiting until you get to that hour, but if you can, every 15 minutes, get up and move. The way your joints get their nutrition is by loading and unloading, and that means walking, weight shifting, changing position, doing 5 to 10 repetitions of a position change, side bending, turning, weight-bearing shifts to help provide some nutrition to your low back, to your spine, because this is coming from your spine most likely, uh-huh. given the things that you've described. So, and you also could work with your office to work on your workstation just to make sure that your seat's the best chair for you, that it's at the appropriate height, that your feet are at the right height for your back, and you have a lumbar support and so on and so forth.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Jane. And on to John in Monona now. John, hello.
Yes, good morning. I have a question about, I play a lot of racquetball. I'm 61 years old and play a lot of racquetball, and a few years ago I dropped out because of knee troubles. A friend of mine recommended glucosamine chondroitin, and it seems to have just turned my knees around.
Fantastic.
Good for you.
Is that something that, am I just a placebo thing, or is it actually working?
That's a really good question. For some people, glucosamine taken in conjunction with chondroitin is helpful. Most people don't stay on it long enough to see if it is truly helpful for them. I believe it's 90 days.
Yes.
Is that right, Lori?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Where you're supposed to stay on it and see if it is helpful for you or not. What I usually tell patients, if after 90 days they're not seeing an improvement, and don't take it. If after 90 days you haven't changed anything else in your lifestyle other than that glucosamine, that it is helpful for you.
And it probably isn't. And we don't know why, but probably about 50% of the people do really well on it. And we know that the effects of it outlive the half-life of the medicine. So it's not just while you're taking it, but it is doing something. Glucosamine is one of the building blocks of connective tissue. So there is something there to it. And why do some people do well and not others? It may have to do with the amount of arthritis and how far the arthritis has advanced when people start to take it. It's not well studied because no one has the patent on it. So it's never going to be well studied. And that's why we say try it. If it works, then that's great. If it doesn't, then don't take it. So it's great that you've gotten relief from it, but don't give up there. You need to keep your body weight down. You need to keep your quadriceps strong. You need to stay active, but within a range that's tolerated by your joints.
Okay. And very quickly, the difference between just glucosamine chondroitin and glucosamine chondroitin complex, is there any recommendation there?
I'm not sure what you're talking about, what your question is. Glucosamine chondroitin or glucosamine chondroitin complex? What's in the complex that's not in the glucosamine chondroitin?
Sulfas and sulfurs.
I can't speak to that.
Yeah, I've never read anything that those help with absorption or anything like that, so I don't know enough about that to answer that either.
Okay, I'd recommend it very highly. Thank you very much.
Good. Thanks,
thank
you, John.
Kathy and Nina, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Larry, Lori and Jill. I have a question about a possible rotator cuff tear.
Okay.
And I fell on this on September 25th. It was a Friday evening. And I fell from a height of about 18 inches from exercise equipment at the gym.
Oh,
and directly onto
terrible.
The right shoulder, immediately I could not lift the right arm laterally, even a half an inch. Waited for a while, drove myself to the hospital. The x-ray showed nothing. It was a Friday, so I had to wait to see an orthopedic surgeon. And since then, I've done about 4 weeks of physical therapy. I can lift the arm now, but there's at night laying, there is so much pain if I don't prop the arm up. Still lifting from a raised position, lowering the arm is quite painful. Even lifting my arm up to the mouse to use a computer is painful. So I'd skipped the MRI thinking and talking with people who have recovered from rotator cuff tears with PT. I'm not sure if now maybe is the time to have an MRI or to still wait and do physical therapy.
Well, you're right at that crust. And first of all, let me just say that night pain, patients with shoulder pathology, one of their chief complaints is night pain. And I think it's because all day long we use our muscles to kind of guard and splint and hold that ball just in the right place in the socket. And at night when we relax and we have increased edema and inflammation in that joint, night pain is probably the chief complaint of patients with shoulder pathology. So you're right in the ballpark with them if it makes you feel any better. With regards to what do I do now, you've had 4 weeks of physical therapy, and it doesn't sound like you've seen some significant improvements. I think it's probably time for you to get some more testing done and an MRI. About half the population responds with rotator cuff tears responds favorably to physical therapy. About half don't. So you may be starting to fall in that category of you may need more than just PT.
And just because you have an MRI doesn't mean you have to have surgery.
Right.
MRI gives you information and gives you a little bit more information than you have right now. And you can listen to that information. You can talk with your physician. And given the new information, you can decide what your plan is next. You can plan to continue the physical therapy for a few more weeks and see how you do. You're not burning any bridges by getting the MRI.
Okay. And MRIs are usually successful in seeing a tear?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
If they're well done.
I hear conflicting stories. That's why I asked.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a reasonable question to ask. I would rely on, if you're contemplating surgery, I would go to the surgeon and have the surgeon recommend the type of MRI they want done. There's various kinds of MRIs to get looking for specific issues.
Right.
If you just go in and get a shoulder MRI from Joe's MRI shop, you may not see what you want to look for, what you're looking for. But the physician who's going to do the surgery should be fairly specific in ordering the MRI to get the information they need.
Right. After their exam, they'll kind of have an idea of what they're looking for, so they can cater the MRI to you.
That's great. I appreciate the info. Thank you.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Got an email from Scott, who's in San Diego.
Sorry, that's our brother.
Hi, Scott.
Oh, he commutes by bicycle.
Yes, he does.
And he's wondering, what about what he should do to warm up prior to riding in this cold weather, that he says.
Yeah, wow, wow, it's about 50 degrees. Well, first of all, let's start by saying that anybody who's 52 probably needs to do a little warm-up prior to hopping on a bike first thing in the morning. So I think he has about a 17-mile commute, if I know. But it's important that you just don't jump on a piece of equipment and do some activity. What I generally say is you don't stretch to warm up, but you need to warm up a little bit to stretch. So you should do a little bit of light aerobic activity, even if it's walking around a little bit, taking the dogs out for a brisk walk prior to doing some stretching.
Mm-hmm. Doing some large motor group activity, marching in place, some lunges, some squats in place to get some blood flow to the tissue and start to loosen some of the bonds of those connective tissues. And then I would recommend a little bit of stretching before you get on the bike, just because of the kind of position I know that you're in. You know, if you're going to go out and you're riding on a trail and it's fairly smooth and you have no problems, I have no problem with you getting on your bike and starting out easy and using that as a warm-up. However, if you're in a city commuting, I think you have to be a little sharper and be ready for a sudden movement because of traffic. And so I think you have to be warmed up and ready to go when you get on that bike in that situation.
Right. More defensive biking.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Now get back to work.
Yeah,
get back to work. Lon in Greenville, it's your turn. Hi, Lon.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just got a quick question. I'm 37. I'll be 38 this winter, and I'm about 6'3 and a half, about 205 to 210, and I've got a kind of a somewhat physically demanding job. I was just wondering if your guests could recommend possible exercise, you know, with low impact. So I can stay physically fit. My job kind of helps keep me physically fit, what I do. But I, you know, hope to do it for about another, you know, 28 to 30 years, I would imagine, before I retire.
Wow, what a great question. If we got questions like that from everybody, we could really help keep people healthy. Exactly.
I do currently, I've stopped playing basketball. I kind of did the Brett Favre thing for the last 5 years. I've been retiring off and on every summer. And finally, I made my wife promise me not to play this summer, and she did a good job. But I've stopped the softball and, you know, sports that could be hard on your body, and I do swim, and I do ride my bike as much as possible.
Those are both wonderful things for you.
Those are great. So a couple things that you bring a really good point, because you have a physically demanding job, and people think, well, I'm very physical at work, so I don't need any other exercise. Well, research has shown that your leisure time activity level is correlated with the health of your joints as you get older, actually the health of all of your connective tissue. Then it's not the amount of physical work you do while you're at your job, but your leisure time physical activity that's associated with long-term joint health. So I think you're right to seek some sort of leisure activity that is compatible with your job. So the first thing I tell people is do what you like. Because if you say, okay, well, I really should, you know, go walk or I should go swim, but you don't like it, you're not going to keep up with it. You'll have invested all this time and energy and you'll be frustrated and give up. So the first thing I tell people is to start with something you like. Do you like being outside? Do you like exercising with other people? Do you like being by yourself? Do you like the water? Do you, you know, what is it that you like? And then build it from there. Okay. So I think you're absolutely right to include things like swimming and biking that are low impact. And they offer variety, you know, biking working primarily lower extremity, the swimming working primarily upper extremity. It's a great balance. Throw in some weights and you're pretty good.
Yeah, that's the only thing I would probably suggest adding is a little bit of weight training, you know, 2 to 3 times a week to balance out your aerobic activity.
Okay.
And like Lori said, mix it up. You can mix it up with the seasons. Cross-country skiing is wonderful in the winter. Rollerblading, you're young, so rollerblading is a great activity. So, you know, the more variety, the better.
Okay. One last question is I'm concerned about keeping my flexibility as I get older, especially. Do you think just regular stretching, or if I looked into like a yoga class, that would be beneficial too, or am I maybe too big for that?
No.
Oh, no, you're not too big for that. And I go back to my original thing, and that is what works for you. If you like being in a group and you need that structure of, I need to be there at, you know, 5:30 on Tuesdays and Thursdays, then go do the yoga class. If you're self-disciplined enough and say, man, I'd rather do it, my stretching during the evening news in the comfort of my own home and my PJs, then that's what you do.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. That is a great call.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to, you know, the yoga, I have a friend who took up yoga and said it really helped his golf game.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big fan of yoga. Again, for the right person and knowing your limits, having a good instructor who can speak to physical limitations and, you know, keeping the exercises safe for everyone.
Right. That and Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
There's some
Tai
really wonderful Tai Chi. You bet. It's great.
Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum are guests today. They are physical therapists, and I'm really pleased to have them with us as we talk aches and pains and sprains and strains here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Aches and pains, sprains and strains are our topic today with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, sisters and physical therapists as well. Glad to have them along and glad to have you listening in. The lines are filled, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Greg in Green Bay is up next, so we go to Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm great segue with that last call for me. I truly am like Brett Favre, and I don't want to quit playing basketball. So I'm 43. I'm 6'3", right around 200 pounds, and I've been athletic my whole life with basketball, cross-country track, running, and a little more impact exercising. And a couple of years back, I was diagnosed with arthritic ankles. And so, it's kind of a drag because sometimes they really hurt, sometimes they don't. And I've got a couple-parter here. It might get a little convoluted. But, you know, so my one question is an activity like basketball necessarily making the arthritic condition any worse? Or is it just if you can deal with the pain and do ibuprofen and do all your, you know, I'm pretty savvy with this as far as stretching and what I need to do that-wise. But, you know, am I really hurting the arthritis? And, you know, because I would like to continue playing basketball and racquetball and such. And then, and B, is are there any options for arthritis as far as maybe a surgical or, you know, anything other than just stretching and maybe ibuprofen? And then the second part is my heels started to hurt recently.
Oh.
I was like, what in the heck now? So I have a friend who's a radiologist who suggested that maybe I have what would be what's called plantar fasciitis,
right.
Which I'm like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm wondering, is arthritis... Is something mm-hmm. like heel pain, which, you know, I didn't go to a doctor for the plantar fasciitis, so I don't know for a fact that that's it. But is that a result of arthritis or something like that at times? And is there anything that could be done for that if that's what it is? Or is it just, hey, you're getting old and you got to live with those things and do what you can do?
Well, let's answer the last question.
I know, but...
let's answer the last question first. So the plantar fasciitis and your ankle arthritis could be related if you have kind of a loss of range of motion at your ankles and you're looking to the neighboring joints to steal some motion. So you rob Peter to pay Paul. So you don't have motion at your ankle. So you might be excessively using the bottom of your foot. So they don't have to be related, but I think they very well could be related and probably are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Maybe changing the way you do things, changing the way you move. And as Jill said, robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's a fairly classic thing, which is why when people have pain at one joint and they say, well, I can kind of live with this and, you know, I can get through my day. We say it's not a good idea because eventually it's going to catch up with you. You're going to be stealing some of the load and passing it on to the adjacent joints.
Okay.
So to the first question, if you just take ibuprofen and it's okay, you know, I don't usually say this, but this is one case where I would say you're not doing yourself any favors by playing basketball and racquetball.
Okay.
If you're 43 and if you have cleared arthritis already in your ankles,
mm-hmm.
Then I would say you're not doing any favors.
Okay.
Partly because there are no good surgical procedures
right.
for your ankles.
Right.
That's part B of your question. If you have a knee, hey, and there are some things I can do. There are some intermediate steps. There are some braces they can use. There's some, you know, you have your glucosamine. You have, you know, your Synvisc injections. There are some things you can do to buy time. Those things don't exist at the ankle.
Right. The ankle itself is a very congruent joint. It's not a joint that we see arthritis at on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So then that makes me start thinking about your your lower extremity alignment and wondering if you would be a candidate for orthotics. Mm-hmm. I mean, if is there something that's that you have in your alignment that's changing how you load your ankle joint that's causing you to have some arthritis?
Yeah, that's the question that came to my mind. You're awfully young to have arthritis. And again, the incidence of or prevalence of ankle arthritis is not very high. So I'm wondering why you have it to begin with, if you had injuries back when you were in sports.
Lots of sprains.
Yeah, you know, yeah, but lots of people have sprains too, but they don't end up having arthritis. So there could be something in your genetic history too. 65% of arthritis is genetic. So if you have a combination of a lot of ankle sprains and bad genetics, then that can set you up. But anyway, there's something going on in your history that is not favorable. So being in an impact activity is not a good idea for you.
And as far as visiting sports medicine and such, as going for the orthotics, who do you visit? What kind of...
Well, I don't know what kind of look you've had, but you apparently saw somebody for the ankles.
An orthopedist.
Yeah, so I would start there, see what the status is. I'd get to physical therapy. I would start there, have them look at your motion, your alignment. They probably work with an orthotist. Before they go to custom, they often try off-the-shelf orthotics to see if they're going to be helpful, and then you can go from there.
Right, and then they can also make recommendations. A physical therapist can make recommendations for shoe wear that would complement your orthotics.
Okay. And then lastly, is plantar fasciitis something that can be diagnosed? I mean, you can see it on an MRI.
The clinical exam.
Yep.
Clinical exam. Okay.
And PT can treat that too.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling, Greg. Chris and Kiwani, we're on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My issue is with my wrist. I play tennis, and when I do top spin, I really flick up my wrist, and it's that bone that sticks out on the outside part of your wrist, and on the front of that is kind of where the pain is isolated. Wondering if you have any suggestions. Are there any kind of wraps or braces?
Is that on the little finger side?
That would be on the little finger side.
Okay. And you have, did this come on all of a sudden, or it came on gradually?
Gradually through the summer playing tennis, and I just got done playing a bunch, and it's really sore again.
Okay. Well, the first thing is you need to have a good diagnosis.
Right.
And there are areas we can have stress fractures. You can have little chip fractures. There's some little bones around your wrist that have little prominences sticking out. So you need to have it checked out first and find out an appropriate diagnosis. It could just be a tendonitis, in which case it should be treated as a tendonitis. And a brace alone won't do that. So
right. And there's lots of ligaments around there that you could be stressing or putting too much load on. You have something called a cartilaginous complex, which is kind of a pad in between that bone and your hand that could be irritated. So I think you have a couple different things going on, but it sounds like you can definitely correlate it with tennis and with your top spin. So that's very helpful from a history perspective, but I think you need an accurate diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. So you can see a physical therapist who specializes in sports. You can start with your physician, but you need to have it looked at and then have someone figure out how to prevent this from coming back. Once you figure out what the specific tissue is that's the problem, you go through a rehab process, and then maybe someone taking a look at your tennis to see what it is about that. Is it just overuse? Is it because you have weakness around your shoulder or your elbow, and so you're compensating by putting more force on the ball at your wrist?
Is it the grip or the tension in your racket?
There are a number of factors to look at to see what's causing it in the first place.
It's probably all of the above, because I've had the shoulder problem and the elbow problem, so it's just moved down to the wrist.
Right, exactly. So, and that's the Rob Peter to PayPal. Exactly. So,
thank you.
You betcha.
Thanks, Chris. Pete and Stoddard, on to you. Hi, Pete.
Hi. I wanted to mention for the lady that had the shoulder problems, rotator cuff, that I had injured myself about 15 years ago, and I was beginning to have a lot of problems in bed. My shoulders just hurt, whether I laid on my side or whether I put my arms up over my head on the pillow. It just was very painful. And I ran into a fellow that I was working with a couple of years before I retired, and he had Lyme's disease so bad, and he had been in such pain. And I seen him at the co-op, and I asked him how he was doing. He's feeling, and he says, great. And I was so surprised. He says, I'm taking 300 milligrams of ginger every day. And he says, I just feel so much better. And so I would start taking 300 milligrams myself, and after about 2 months, I wondered if it was really doing anything, and then all of a sudden, I just didn't notice it, but all of a sudden, I could stretch in bed, and it felt so great. I could put my arms up over my head, and no problems with my shoulders, so I just might suggest that for people.
Huh.
Well, thank you.
Ginger.
I haven't heard ginger in the past, but I know that there are certainly some herbs that people recommend, mm-hmm. herbs and spices that people recommend for different kinds of pathologies. So if you want to give that a try, I'd just perhaps run it by your physician, make sure there's no other
right.
medical reason why you shouldn't take that.
Right, or it doesn't affect any current drug medications mm-hmm. you're taking.
Or interactions.
Right.
Some things, even though they're available over the counter or they seem like a home remedy or something, they can still have a significant impact on your health.
Especially in high doses.
Mm-hmm, especially in high doses. So Pete's right on both counts.
Thanks very much, Pete, for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, we're on to James in Milwaukee. James, hello.
Hi. I'm an ancient, 86 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Good for you.
I've been very active all my life, but last year I developed stenosis, and I've had two shots in the back
mm-hmm.
To reduce inflammation. They've worked passably well. But I'm debating when to get the third one. Would that I'm permitted three of them.
Right.
And I'm just wondering about that third shot. Is that...
How long ago did you have the first two?
I had, a month ago and then 2 weeks ago, and then I'm due for the last one in another week.
Okay. So are you feeling some progressive improvement with each shot?
Yes,
I have. Then I'd... As long as you haven't had any negative things develop post, I would say to go ahead and do that, particularly if that's what your physician is recommending. And then I would continue to follow that up with some physical therapy
right.
or physical activity. And the pool is a great place mm-hmm. for you if you haven't tried that yet as an option for a place to exercise with your stenosis.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum are guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your physical health today, your aches and your pains or strains or sprains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, their sisters, physical therapist in the UW Madison's Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation. So really pleased to have them both with us. And so many callers online right away. We're going to go right back to the phones here. And Jeff in McQuantico, you are up next. Hi, Jeff. Jeff, are you there? Where's Jeff? Maybe we lost Jeff. Well, we lost Jeff. So we'll go to Holly in Stetsonville. Holly, hello.
Hello. I just had meniscal tears in my knee, left knee, on Thursday, and I'm trying to keep it up and ice it and everything. And prognosis-wise, I'll find out more like on Thursday, but what can I do to be up and running since I work for the post office and I stand and then I drive a lot? Compression socks, maybe, or something? Will I be up and running by December 1st?
So you just tore your meniscus? You just had a meniscal tear on Thursday?
I had surgery on Thursday to repair the inside of the medial and the lateral meniscus.
And they repaired them?
Right.
Okay, versus having them resected, because that's entirely different. So that's very good information to know.
So you're clear that they repaired it. They didn't take it out?
No, they didn't take it out. They just repaired, cleaned it up, and stitched it. And right now it's swollen, and I'm icing it as much as possible. And everybody says, do what you're told and don't do too much. Well,
yeah,
I'm a farmer, so trying to keep
up and not doing
too much and then working for the post
office,
I'm trying
to catch
myself.
Exactly, exactly. Can I ask your age, Holly?
54,
okay. The meniscus doesn't heal very well because it doesn't have a great blood supply. So a lot of it depends upon the location of the tear. So if they repaired it in a place that had a pretty good blood supply and the tear was in the direction that the fibers already run, then you could be in pretty good shape. If it was a complex tear, if it was a degenerative tear, if there's associated degenerative joint disease, then it's going to be different. It's a pretty difficult question to answer over the air because there's there's a lot of variables. But in general, you really do need to follow what the surgeon says or else the repair will fail. So there's a high incidence of failure with these, especially in an older knee, which probably already has a little bit of arthritis in it, especially if you're a farmer. Farmers tend to have a high incidence of arthritis in their joints to begin with. So I would say doing the exercises. Have you been sent to physical therapy yet?
Not yet. They just told me to, you know, wiggle my foot up and down. I call them butt squeezes, sort of working on the backside of your leg and leg lifts.
And leg lifts, yep.
And a lot of ice and keep it up.
Yeah. Those would be the big things right now until you go back. And then I would have a pretty frank discussion with the surgeon about what you can and can't do and the prognosis and getting into physical therapy.
Right. Having a meniscal repair typically means that there is some sort of blood supply or flow to that area of the meniscus, and they're trying to save it for you, which is good because we need our meniscus. So the rehab from a meniscal repair is typically a little longer than when they just go in and snip out your meniscus. But in the long run, you're going to come out ahead because you have more of that meniscus left. So you kind of have to pay for it up front. And as Lori said, be very obedient and diligent with what they tell you to do. But in the long run, hopefully you can have a good outcome and you still have that nice cushion in your knee.
And then like when I haul mail, I stand a couple hours sorting mail and then I'm in the car for the rest of the day.
Standing in a stationary position is going to be hard on your knee, but if you're standing, as long as you continuously sort of shift your weight back and forth from side to side, you'll be fine. My mom called that dancing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So compression socks would be also a good idea?
Sure,
You have swelling, yes.
Yes, if you have swelling from, you know, being up on your feet a lot during the day, that would be a good idea. And make sure you wear shoes that have a nice, good cushion in them.
You're really looking more for support and cushion from the bottom up, not necessarily from the outside in, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
The compression stocking will control swelling. If you don't have swelling, it's a non-issue. But what you really need is, as Jill said, the cushion from the bottom up.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck, Holly. Thanks a lot for calling. And Matt in Racine, you're up next. Hi there, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I've had a problem with the muscle that's located behind my left shoulder blade. I believe it starts with a T. It's got a big, long name. Long story short, I injured it, and I went to the doctor, and they said it was inflamed. For months, it just hurt and ached. It wouldn't go away. I couldn't get comfortable no matter what I was doing, and it was just very bothersome. I went to rehabilitation, and they did ultrasound stuff to it, and it got better. It was good for about a year, and then it happened again, and I was out for another couple months. And I'm a very active guy. I work out a lot, and I was just wondering, I guess, what I could do to help prevent it.
So where about around your shoulder blade is it located? Kind of between your shoulder blade and your spine?
I mean, it feels like it's right behind my shoulder blade.
Right behind your shoulder. And how did you injure it?
I believe it was at work. I used to work building big outboard boat motors.
Okay.
And I believe I pulled one that was on the line.
Okay.
And it must have inflamed it somehow.
Okay.
That was the what the doctor said anyhow.
Okay. Well, most muscle injuries recover fairly well. I mean, unless you've ruptured a muscle and pulled it away from its bony attachment, most muscles respond fairly predictably and consistently with a strengthening program. So if you've been that route and you're still having problems, then it makes me start thinking that you need to look elsewhere as a source of your problem. The next thing that comes to mind is your thoracic spine. And an injury in your thoracic spine, a disc problem or a facet problem in your thoracic spine can certainly create pain in that area. So if no one has looked at your spine in the area between, you know, your neck and your low back and your thoracic area, somebody should do that. So whether it's the physical therapist, I would see a physical therapist who specializes in spine and manual therapy to look at that and see if that's the cause of the problem. Then sort of next down on my differential diagnosis or why isn't this getting better list is that the way you're moving and the way you're working has not been addressed. And that is, there's something you're doing in how you move and use your arms and your body in your job that's predisposing you to continuously re-injure that area. So that's the other avenue that you could go to consider why this keeps happening again. But I would start with the thoracic spine.
Okay, because the second time that it happened to me, they actually gave me cortisone shots, five or six around the area. And after a month or so after the shots, it got better. But, once it gets better, it's better for a while, and then somehow it happens again. And it's really bothersome. It gets to the point to where it takes a few months for it to actually heal. Mm-hmm. And by that time, my left side, my muscular... left side has shrank it from inactivity, not being able to use it.
Yeah, that's not right. A muscle should respond in a much more rapid fashion than that. So there's something else going on. And again, I would start with your spine. Have someone looking at your spine.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Matt. Let us know how that turns out.
Yep.
Kathy in Ocano, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My doctor told me about a year ago I had an inflamed sacroiliac joint, and my discomfort had been going on for about a year and resulting from hiking uphill. So she suggested a chiropractor, and so I went, and it provided some relief for a week or two, but then it came back. So over this winter, the pain's been off and on, but then this summer it went away. I think because I was gardening a lot and getting more exercise, and now it's back. And the worst times are at night. I wake up in the night and it hurts, and so I turn over a lot. And if I'm sitting, in a car, long periods of time. So what I'm wondering is, the chiropractor did show me a stretching exercise to do for it, which I do, and that does provide some relief periodically. But I'm wondering two things. Number one, is there a cure for this? Is there something I can do to really make it go away? And number two, what can I do especially for the pain at night?
Those are really good questions. The SI joint starts out pretty mobile, and then as we age, it gets a little less mobile. However, there still is some mobility there. And I think what I would strongly recommend is that you see a physical therapist who specializes in spine, and they can evaluate your SI joint. It can be a little out of place. And with different techniques such as joint mobilization or stretching certain muscles or strengthening other muscles, you can actually kind of pull your SI joint back into alignment. So, first of all, I don't know that I would call it a cure, but I think you need to be looked at very carefully to see, to make sure that your mechanics are lining up appropriately. And we always do the scratch your head thing. Why do you only have this on one side, as Lori talked about earlier? So I think seeing a physical therapist who specializes in back and spine and the SI joint would be very helpful. Number two, the pain. Are you in a certain position at night when you wake up, Kathy?
Yeah, I'm usually lying on the side where the joint bothers me.
Yeah.
So you're probably compressing that joint a little bit. So I would suggest two things. Number one, if you do lie on your side, put a big pillow between your knees. That will help unload it. Or lie on your back with a pillow under your knees to bring your spine more in a neutral alignment.
Okay. Would taking ibuprofen before I go to bed help?
It may. If there's truly some inflammation there, it will help with it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, and the other issue, the other point that you actually brought up yourself was that you felt better this summer when you were active. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be important for you to stay active and think about how you were active, what kind of movement you made, on what kind of schedule, was it daily, for what period of time, and just think about how you can continue that kind of schedule and those kinds of activities into the winter. Even if you're not gardening, there are other activities that can substitute that, and it's going to be really important for you to figure out what you can do to maintain the health of that joint for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it does sound like something that possibly I could cure, and if not, just work on ways to alleviate the pain.
Absolutely.
You're going to learn how to manage it.
Right.
Yep. And thank you very much for calling, Kathy. And we'll turn to Bob next in Winona, Minnesota. Bob, hello to you.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Oh, about 2 years ago, I was in to see the physician, and I was diagnosed with torn labrums. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Yep.
And what I did, I told him I had no strength or or not as much strength in my arms and gripping, pushing, pulling, everything else. And I said there was pain. Well, he told me to schedule surgery. I did not schedule surgery. The pain didn't go away, but I learned to cope with it. And then here in March, I pulled, was lifting, and he said I stretched my biceps and my tendons in one arm like taffy. Anyway, I'm finally recovering from that, but I'm noticing in that arm I don't have the strength I used to, nor do I have it in the other arm. So I don't have the strength that I used to have, and I'm wondering if having that surgery would correct it.
Well, if you have tears in your labrum in your shoulder, first of all, your labrum kind of deepens the socket for the ball and socket joint a little bit. And what we found is that with the advent of MRI, it can be a blessing and a curse. We found that there are lots and lots of people who have tears in their labrum who may not need surgery at all. It may not be the source of their symptoms. So I can't say that having your labrum repaired would make you stronger. If it decreases your pain such that your ability to do some good strengthening exercises, then it may be helpful. But it sounds to me like you got over the hump of the initial pain with the labrum and that your pain had subsided a little bit. And it sounds like you just had a recurring injury in March.
Yeah, it's a little hard to say over the radio, but the issue where you injured your biceps makes me wonder if, because your shoulders are not functioning well, if you're overusing your biceps, for example, at your elbow, if you're using other muscles to substitute the Rob Peter to pay Paul issue, which has become the theme of this show. So would the surgery have helped? Who knows? You know, hindsight's 20/20. But what would help is getting into a rehabilitation program, a physical therapy program, to try to build up the strength around your shoulders so that they can do what they're supposed to do, so you don't have to try to use your biceps. If you did stretch and injure your biceps, and it's possible you could have even had a partial rupture of your biceps on that side, then you're going to lose a significant amount of power in that arm. So it's worthwhile for you to get into physical therapy and build up strength in the muscles that remain there so you don't hurt anything else. You can hurt the other arm, you hurt your neck, you hurt your back, because your shoulders lack sufficient strength to do their job.
Okay. So now, and also, having said what you did about the biceps, would that affect my lower arms also?
Probably, because if your biceps can't do what they need to do, then you move right on down the kinetic chain and you use your wrists and forearms to do what your biceps used to do. Or actually, there's muscles that your brachioradialis is actually functions as an elbow flexor. So yeah, some of your forearm muscles are actually probably taking over the job of your biceps because your biceps aren't doing what they're supposed to do.
Okay, and then if I go back to the labrum where he said they're detached and they need to be attached again, if I start there, then maybe my shoulders might get back to where they're used to, and therefore I might not be overcompensating with other parts of my arm?
Right. That's definitely a possibility. But before you go down the path of surgery, I would suggest physical therapy, because you may get the exact same outcome with a really good strengthening program via physical therapy and avoid surgery altogether.
Absolutely. And if you do have surgery, you're going to want to be strong as you can before surgery. So
right.
I wholeheartedly agree that you should start with physical therapy, get yourself built up. If you get to the point where you say this isn't good enough or we can't make any progress in physical therapy because of the limitations of the pathology in your shoulder, then you need to go on and address the surgery. But at least you'll know that you've tried everything else first.
Yeah, and good luck. Thank you very much, Bob, for calling. And Tammy and Eau Claire, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Tammy.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am having neck pain, which I injured probably 15, 17 years ago. I refer to my neck pain as being always on a dimmer switch. It's never off. It's just shades of how intense it is. I've been through physical therapy. I've had the battery of shots. I've just started yoga, but I'm trying to find something that I'm going to get a little more relief with.
Okay.
Okay. So you've been to physical therapy. When's the last time you were in physical therapy?
It's probably been almost a year now.
Okay. And have your symptoms changed since you stopped therapy a year ago?
No, it hurts all the time.
Okay. And do you have a home program that you do of exercises and
stretches, and I walk.
And you walk?
Good.
Okay. if you're still not getting relief, you can certainly go back to the physical therapist and have your program retooled. Not knowing specifically what the pathology is in your neck makes it hard to address if anything's been overlooked. But if you have questions about whether or not there's anything other than what you were offered at your previous PT, you can always go to another physical therapist. I'd go to somebody who specializes in spine. I'd go to somebody who has manual therapy skills if you haven't had those things tried. Some hands-on joint mobilization, stretching, tender point assessment, and so on, and see if that can give you some immediate relief, as well as, again, a follow-up home program so you can continue the progress that was made.
Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have done that. I've seen an osteopath as well as a chiropractor. I am taking naproxen twice a day. They said that it was arthritis right where the neck meets your back. I want to say C7, but I'm not.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. And I actually did check. I've had MRIs, and I've checked into actually surgical options, and they're telling me there's nothing really surgically they can do. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of reaching a point where I'm looking for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you gone through a chronic pain clinic of any sort?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, that would be another option to offer you. So,
the first thing they offered me was narcotic drugs, and I don't really want to explore that yet.
Okay. Well, there are other pain clinics that have other philosophies, too, of other kinds of interventions rather than narcotics as the first line of relief. But given that most people show up with significant pain, it's more helpful and often easier to talk about other intervention options once you get their pain under control. So usually the first line is to help people manage their pain. Then once they're at that place, then they can talk about other options for the long term.
Okay.
So it may be worthwhile sticking with them and investigating other options.
Okay. Right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tammy. And Eric in Madison, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I'm calling about a mysterious recurring problem that happens every few months, maybe two or three times per year, where my left heel gets sore, a little bit sore, and then the next day it gets worse, and the next day it gets even worse to the point where I can't walk. I'm hobbling around. I get my crutches out. It's happening right now. I'm on my crutches today. And it's after, then it gets real bad, then after a few more days it goes away. And fine for a few more months. And it's very mysterious. I have been seeing a rheumatologist who suspected gout, but he hasn't been able to prove it. And I was wondering about the possibility of plantar fasciitis or other things. I don't know. It's just real mysterious, and I'd like to find out more about it.
Sounds like plantar fasciitis.
What's the worst time of day with your heel pain?
The worst time of day? That's a good question. I think it gets kind of worse as the day goes on.
Okay.
It varies. Well, sometimes I'll get up and it hurts, and then I'll walk around a little bit and it feels better.
Okay.
Sometimes it'll get worse during the day.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, it does have a plantar fascia kind of overtone to it. typically, it does kind of show up mysteriously. Usually, if we're very careful, we can trace it back to activity level, footwear. Spending a lot of time on stairs or ladders tends to set it off. Carrying things, like at a time of year when you might be carrying things in your arms or maybe you aren't wearing sufficient support in your shoes, tends to get worse. And it's most predictably worse your first step out of bed in the morning. And then after you walk a little bit, then it gets better. If you sit down, it gets better. Then when you get up and start moving again, it hurts again until you get it loosened up. Then it feels better. It has that kind of pattern over the course of the day.
Yeah, it's interesting that you only have it on one side. And you can't think of anything, as Lori said, in the history, you can't think of anything that you do or any change prior.
You bike a lot?
I used to bike more. I still bike a fair amount. Yeah.
So it could be related to biking and the position that your foot is in. Usually when you're any activity where you have the ball of your foot on something, such as going up the stairs where you just put the ball of your foot on it or stand on a ladder or the bike, as Larry suggested.
Or standing pedaling on a bike may do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It.
So those things might be why it's sort of mysteriously showing up. But it can be effectively treated with physical therapy. So if your rheumatologist hasn't sent you to physical therapy, this might be a time to have a physical therapist look at it. And as Jill said, look at you and how you move and see if there's a reason why you're getting it just on one side.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it very much. And Lori and Jill, thank you so much. The time flew.
Thanks. It's been fun.
Yeah.
We didn't plan that.
Lori Tyne, excuse me, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. They're both physical therapists with the University of Wisconsin. We're really pleased to have them with us today. And hopefully they'll come back and we'll do this again. Just to let you know, tomorrow, Veterans Day, James Campbell talks about the heroism of Wisconsin's 32nd Division in his book, The Ghost Mountain Boys. Stay with us. Lots in store.